Good evening. This is Deep Dive with Dr. Tracy, and I am your host, Dr. Tracy Pearson. If you this is your first time watching, welcome. And if you watched our first episode, welcome back. We have an incredible show for you tonight. I am super excited about our two guests. We'll be hearing from Dr. Stephen Hassan, the world's foremost expert on destructive cults and mind control, and Michelle Johnson, an associate with the Center on Media Literacy and president of Ignite Global Good. There's a lot to cover. So in September of 2001, I remember watching TV in my living room, and I found myself spontaneously crying. You know, that sort of crying where it sneaks up on you. All of a sudden, you're overwhelmed with emotion. I wasn't watching a movie. I was watching the news. I was watching coverage of the aftermath of the attack on the World Trade Center. Reporters were in Lower Manhattan in the dark, and in the background, the changing and clanging and all of the efforts going on to rescue workers, from the World Trade Center and locate survivors, a still burning fire and the debris blowing through the air. It was overwhelming. And I watched these reporters negotiate space with distraught people who were holding on to photographs of their loved ones, gripping onto those photos and their hope that they would be found alive. On January 6, 2021, almost 20 years later, I received an alert on my phone and I turned on the news and I saw an out of control mob of people attacking the US Capitol. I started to cry. We had managed to keep ourselves together for 4 long years of chaos with only the help of the courts. And we were only days away from the transition to a new president and hopefully some stability when this attack came from within. These people referred to themselves as patriots. They're anything but. The tears stopped, but I was angry. I'm still angry. When I went to school, I had to learn civics. I even remember my teacher's name, Mr. Wilson. And I had social studies and history and teachers like Barbara Mee, Mrs. Mee. And in these classes as a kid, I learned the basics of how government works. Eventually, I went to law school and I had 3 classes on the US Constitution. 3. So I know what the Constitution says, but our Constitution is readily available to read. Do the Google. It's all right there. It isn't a secret. How was it possible that any of these people thought that attacking a federal building was okay? That searching for Mike Pence, the vice president, of whom I am no fan, with a plan to hang him, murder him, that was okay? That breaking windows, beating cops, damaging an historical building, stealing property, and frightening the bejesus out of all of the occupants, forcing them to hunker down and be shuttled off to some location in the hope of safety. How any of that was patriotic? When this country was founded, it was founded to escape a king. These folks were trying to upend all that was fought for. How these same folks think that there is no COVID or it won't kill you after we hit the milestone of 800 deaths in the United States yesterday, that taking an antifungal medicine for horses would cure a virus when a virus and a fungus are different. How they think that former president is still the president. Look, in 2016, I was distraught that Hillary Clinton did not win. I was distraught for many reasons, but I didn't attack a building. None of us did. I didn't threaten to kill the vice president or try to seek out now former Speaker Paul Ryan. When I said he wasn't my president, I was saying he didn't represent me. I've been trying to understand all of this, and thankfully, our first guest helps me do just that. Dr. Stephen Hassan is the author of the book, The Cult of Trump, which I highly recommend to you. It's accessible, and it's not a political book. I know you don't believe me, but it's not a political book. It's an analysis using established principles in psychology and sociology, and it makes an argument for why Donald Trump is a cult leader. I'm upfront about my politics. I know that some of you watching don't agree with me. That's okay. But I think that before anyone passes judgment on this book, you need to read it. Don't say he isn't until you understand why Dr. Hassan thinks he is. Dr. Hassan has appeared on CNN, appeared on Fox News, and now he appears here on ENSL TV. Because of scheduling, I interviewed Dr. Hassan earlier. Here's our interview. Dr. Hassan, welcome to Deep Dive with Dr. Tracy. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure and honor. Thanks for asking me.
So there is controversy in professional circles over the term cult, and with the conclusions that researchers like yourself, that mind control exists. What's your answer to that criticism, and how do we think mind control exists?
Well, I would say it's kind of obvious if someone is coercing someone else using psychological measures, that's what I refer to as coercive persuasion, thought reform. If somebody is inducted into a totalist cult with as a radical personality change, which happened to me in the Moonies in 1974, I want to be clear that social psychologists understand how easy human beings are to influence. It's an issue of understanding techniques. For example, the law of reciprocity is one thing that Dr. Robert Cialdini put in his landmark book, Influence. It says that if someone does something nice for you, you have the impulse to do something nice back, right? So a lot of cults and undue influence peddlers will give you a gift or give you a free ski weekend for just 1 hour of your time to tell you about a wonderful opportunity, because they understand that you feel indebted unconsciously, right? There's so many other techniques. The other thing that I want to say for your listeners is the people who say that brainwashing and mind control doesn't exist are mostly authoritarian cults or scholars of religion who have been paid to interview happy cult members, and they say, are you brainwashed? Oh, no, you're not. Oh, okay. And they write it up in professional journals, and they disregard ex-members. They disregard objective factual investigations. And so I just want to share one more quick story. I was on Oprah Winfrey in 1989, that we were doing a show on the Church Universal and Triumphant of Elizabeth Clare Prophet. And there were two daughters of hers. One was in, one was out. There was a PR person for the cult. There was an ex-security guard. Then there was me, the cult expert. And then there was a cult expert who doesn't believe in brainwashing. And when Oprah said to Lowell Stryker, was his name, so what about Jonestown? What would make people kill their own children? Wasn't that brainwashing? He said, no. And at that point, she was like, hell with him. It's kind of obvious. If you love your kids and you're pouring cyanide-laced Kool-Aid down their throats knowing you're going to kill them, this is not a normal act of parental love.
Something's making them do it.
Correct. And then I would add trafficking law, fraud, force, or coercion. labor trafficking, sex trafficking. It is a known illegal act. That is undue influence. It's called coercion.
So how do you distinguish a cult from a political party or from what might be called a mainstream religion?
Essentially, I think of things on a continuum of ethical to unethical. And so informed consent is ethical. Lying, withholding vital information, distorting is unethical. Encouraging people to ask questions and read whatever they want to read and talk to critics and former members is ethical. Telling people, don't trust the media, don't talk to ex-members, they're traitors, right? You get the idea. There are real polarities. Furthermore, I did my doctoral work on the BITE model of authoritarian control, which is my model that talks about the B is behavior control of the BITE, I is information control, thought control, and emotional control. And I have a list on my freedomofmind.com website that you can go through the laundry list, controlling sleep, diet, clothing, needing to ask permission for major, you can go through the list of each thing. And the more you go tick, 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 tick in any group, could be a political group, a commercial group, a one-on-one relationship, a large group awareness, multi-level marketing, religion, the more BITE, the more authoritarian it is. Furthermore, I take the position that there are healthy cults, but you can, you know what you're getting into and you can leave without threat, fear, harassment. People won't cut you off if you decide, you know what, I want to go down to the church down the street, not here. People will still be your friends. Cults will be like, you traitor, you're going to Satan. You know, just this extreme of hatred, fear, you know, dependency and obedience is what they want. And it's an epidemic right now, as we can see.
And thinking about that sort of checklist that you're talking about, you know, turning your attention to your new book, The Cult of Trump, a common understanding of how a cult works is that you're love bombed, you're indoctrinated, you're separated, you're isolated from your family and friends to maintain control. But with the MAGA followers, Trump's followers, they aren't separated physically. There isn't a compound where they're holed up from society. They hold jobs, they engage with their schools.
So, some do, some live on compounds. Yeah, but what I want to say is that what's changed since my involvement with the Moonies in the 70s is the internet and social media and cell phones. So you don't need to be in an isolated property anymore if you're only getting notifications from cult propaganda entities. And if you're being given phobias or irrational fears against the other. So Biden is an Illuminati sex trafficking, you know, alien green reptile. And people will believe this if they're indoctrinated to believe they're evil, we're doing God's will. And the thing, when I was researching the Cult of Trump book, the only thing I knew when I started the project was that Trump was a malignant narcissist, which is the stereotypical profile of every cult leader, which is, you know, the grandiosity, need for praise, the sense of entitlement, lack of empathy, but then the psychopathological stuff, thinking they're above the law, pathological lying, threats, sadism, paranoia, etc. So I started with that, and I did chapter 3 of The Cult of Trump, comparing Trump with Jim Jones, my former cult leader, Sun Myung Moon, and L. Ron Hubbard of Scientology, just to frame out that at the very beginning, I was thinking, oh, this is a cult of personality, for sure, dangerous person. But then as I did research, I realized there are actual cults that form the Cult of Trump. Putin, I consider a political cult leader, a dictator of a country. There's a cult called The Family that Michael Pence was recruited into by Chuck Colson of Watergate fame. And Jeffrey Charlotte wrote two best-selling books on the cult called The Family. Opus Dei, which is an authoritarian branch of the Catholic Church that thinks the Pope is satanic. And then we get to many millions of people are in what's called New Apostolic Reformation churches or movements. And these are not, and this is where the media got it wrong, these are not just white Christian evangelicals. Friends with and they're going to do whatever their leader says. If their leader says, we hate Trump tomorrow, everyone's going to hate Trump. If they say, we're going to support, you know, Hawley or some other politician, they'll vote for Hawley because they're so programmed. The world is filled with Satan and only I can be protected by following my apostle or my prophet. And in the book, I go into the white supremacists, the neo-Nazis, the gun lobby, the Jewish right-wing extremists, etc. But there are actual destructive cults in the cult of Trump.
Then there's a other group of people. And what I don't understand is how a group of people without golden toilets themselves or any type of privilege that Donald Trump has or had identifies with someone who is largely an established failure with six bankruptcies and who was frankly a punchline before he became president. Can you help me understand that? Is there an explanation?
Mind control.
But I guess what
I'm making a joke, but I'm not. You know, we humans are learning organisms and we're dependent on information. And if you surround somebody hearing someone's name over and over and over, and they're using very sophisticated linguistic techniques like projection. Oh, Biden's doing the coup. No, they're doing the coup. No, Biden's doing the coup. And you deflect, you project, you repeat, you instill fears. And believe me, you can subliminally program people. One of the earliest thing was the Exorcist movie. They put images faster than the conscious mind could see of evil just to scare people more in the possession scene. This stuff is being done online all the time with our privatized data because we have no protection of our personal data. And people are being pummeled with this, you know, this programming. And they actually don't think Russia had anything to do with the 2016 or 2020 election, even though there's overwhelming proof that they were systematically involved with it. Why? Because they've been told so. And you're not allowed to criticize or think. The minute you start questioning the cult, then everyone turns on you and calls you a traitor and threatens to shun you. And that's what happened to David Weissman, who I interviewed for The Cult of Trump, who was a self-professed MAGA troll. And he was harassing Sarah Silverman. And she did what I recommend people do, which is, oh, you're a veteran. Thank you for your service. Instead of like ignoring him or saying buzz off or just blocking. So you think that gun control is wrong? What's your suggestion for how to stop people going into schools and killing other children? And a celebrity asking him his opinion really stopped him in his tracks. And he started thinking, I don't know what would be good. What do you think, Sarah? And Sarah said, I think you should check out this website and this website. And let's talk again. And he came out and he's one of the most you know, eloquent, you know, sharers as a former Trump troll, that how bad it is in there. And everyone turned on him. He was like a very well-known troll for them until he said, nope, I think the Democrats actually are healthier. And all of a sudden, he was a traitor.
Right. So now the premise behind my show is that we need more education in this country and fewer talking points. Now, the January 6th mob that stormed the Capitol with weapons, some of them, somehow believed that either they or then Vice President Pence could act in a way that was contrary to what the U.S. Constitution provided. Now, I'm a lawyer by training, and that just sort of blew my mind that a group of people could think that they could do something other than what the document provided. Now, maybe a little naive on my part, but do you think education plays a role in susceptibility to becoming part of a cult?
100%. Most people walk around with what we call the myth of invulnerability. Everybody walks around thinking it could never happen to me. That woman who got branded by her genitals by Keith Raniere of NXIVM, that would never happen to me. Until they actually understand the story and the incremental deceptions and use of hypnotic programming in that cult. Once you understand that, now all of a sudden you're not thinking you're above it all, not blaming the victims that they were weak or stupid. That's why they believe this stupid stuff. And now you might be educated to understand things like there is an influence continuum. There's ethical influence, like parents need to ethically control their children till they become an adult. But good parenting is developmentally appropriate, aiming at helping someone be an adult, versus the authoritarian stuff where the parents want the kids to regurgitate the parents' beliefs and be obedient or they beat the crap out of them, right? So we need to do education, but it's not just critical thinking, it's media literacy, but it's also understanding the techniques of manipulation and control and role playing. If I had had it 1 hour, if I had attended one of my speeches, you know, if I could shoot it back in time, I never would have gotten involved with the Moonies. I just didn't know anything about cults. The women were flirting and I thought they were interested in me because I told them my girlfriend just dumped me. So they went, oh, good. You know, and I didn't understand. And the minute I realized they lied, I allowed their deflection and diverting my attention to, wait a minute, anything legitimate, nobody's lying. I'm out of here. You don't have a van to drive me home? I'm calling the police. You know, right. Like you need to have that level of certitude. Once you understand someone's been lying and manipulating you, just walk out. And there's lots of former members, just Google. For example, igotout.org is a group I'm involved with. We have a hashtag, I got out. We're trying to destigmatize having been under mind control for the public so that they're not ashamed and embarrassed. And all the people who are still in the MAGA bubble that are doubting can know it's not them. It's the bubble. It's Trump, it's not them. Come out to freedom. Have your conscience back again. Reclaim your personal volition.
Now, back in 2000, I worked in a job where I was in upstate New York and I would provide service to folks in the forensic facility in Utica. And I remember interacting with a gentleman there who, you know, said he was the president of the United States and he was going to take me to the clouds above Buffalo. I also had a client that thought he was the Surgeon General and the Attorney General, and he'd wear sleeveless shirts and with stars on them and march kids, platoons of kids around the park relatively harmlessly. But recently, there have been reports about people who have been showing up in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, expecting that John F. Kennedy Jr., a man who died a very tragic death,
And he was a member of a family that some see as a Democratic Party dynasty family.
Yep.
They expect that he was going to appear, that he would become Trump's vice president when Trump was reinstated, even though there's no method for doing that. And that John F. Kennedy Jr. is very much alive. Now, understanding that you can't diagnose someone that you've never seen, and I'm not asking you to do that. What's the difference between these people I described when you know I was working back in New York State and the folks in Dealey Plaza?
It's a great question. I'm involved with a forensic think tank at Harvard Medical School called the Program in Psychiatry and the Law. And it was there that they convinced me to do my doctoral research because undue influence needs to be clearly defined in the legal system, and it isn't yet. And it really needs to be. So what you're asking is a question of differential diagnosis, you know, and there are people who have schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, et cetera. You need to do a very detailed history. What's different about my population, I'm a mental health professional, is that they're pretty much normal people who get radicalized and their families are like, what's up with Steve? He hated Nixon. Now he's fasting for Nixon because God said, you know, Moon said God wanted him to be president. So there's a clear shift and clear forces that impacted on people. That said, there are a lot of former cult members who are leaving cults, going to mental health professionals, and they are not trained to know what to ask or what to look for. So they think that they're delusional or they're schizophrenic, and they put them on all kinds of medications instead of saying, tell me more. How long were you involved with this church? Why did you leave it? What do people say about your church? Does anyone have any critical things? Oh, it's a cult? Why do they call it a cult? Have you looked it up online to find out more about? They don't do any of that. You know, so, you know, mental health professionals need, and I'm working on developing a course for mental health professionals to understand how to diagnose someone who has a naturalistic psychological disorder versus someone who's expressing shared delusions, shared psychoses, because they're trusting some leader is channeling God or is in touch with, you know, new dimensions of reality or whatever. So that's my answer to that one. I can tell you I've worked with, I don't know, at least 15 Jesuses, I mean, people who said they were Jesus, like now. And
not one came true. Not one came true.
No. So the thing is we have imaginations. And if you're talking about hypnosis and you program somebody to believe in past lives like Scientology does, and they say you're having a trauma, tell us about your trauma. Go back in time to an earlier version. Then you're in utero. You're still messed up. They say, go into your past lives because the trauma must originate. So they're like Napoleon Bonaparte or Jesus or whatever in their past lives. But that way Scientology can keep them on the hook forever because they can keep inventing new past lives.
Right. Now, during the tail end of the 2016 election, and most certainly after former Secretary Hillary Clinton's loss, people started to draw lines in the sand, separating from family members who supported Trump. Was that the right thing to do?
No. I think it's been one of the major problems. But I completely understand why people feel frustrated and helpless and fatigued trying to interact with a cult member, because you're trying to talk logically and they're talking a fire hose of propaganda that has no validity. And people, you know, again, they try to logically persuade a cult member out, which the way a cult member is programmed, that's persecution. What I've been encouraging people is to be warm, especially if it's a family member or a longstanding friend. Remind them of the good times you had together. Tell them that you want to, you know, them in your life forever, and say, you know how much I respect you. I know you're intelligent. I know you're educated. I don't understand how you believe what you believe, but I'm open to changing my mind. Let's agree step by step. Share something with me that was very persuasive to you. Let's watch it together. Let's critique it together. Then it'll be my turn to share something that was persuasive to me. We'll watch it together. We'll discuss it together. So in other words, you're doing a truth-seeking frame, not I'm right, you're wrong, I'm good, you're bad. The kind of binary black and white, all or nothing, that's cult thinking. And I've done a blog against cancel culture on the left and the right. It's not just the left. The right's been doing cancel culture at least as long as the left has been doing. I'm just against it. I'm for human rights and treating people with respect and kindness. And hey, you believe the earth is flat? Tell me how you came to believe this. You know, and really being willing to be patient and kind and be curious and ask good questions and make people think about what happened.
Now, that said, now I remember that the movie Men in Black, I don't know if you remember that movie, but where there was this great
big... Yeah, isn't there a 1, 2, and 3, Men in Black?
Yes, yes. And they had a great big thing called a great big flashy thing, I think was the way they referred to it, that allowed agents to recreate memories for those who had seen supposed alien encounters.
Yeah, this amnesia generator.
Yes, exactly. And so Trump can't live forever. Are we in a situation where another one will simply rise in his place, or barring a big flashy thingy, do you think that there's a way out of this where, you know, we have a large percentage of people who are so disconnected with reality and what's going on in the world?
The key is I'm an optimist and I'm a fighter in the sense of not physical fighting, but I believe in not giving up my democracy and human rights. Efforts. Education, like you said, is the critical thing that people need to understand. People need to understand what hypnosis is. Most people think of stage hypnotists who get people to bark like dogs and cluck like chickens. I'm trained as a clinical hypnotherapist, even though I don't do that kind of work with my clients, but I teach my clients who are in cults what hypnosis is, what it isn't. I give examples of how it was used on them. And I teach them how to protect themselves in the future. So for example, you've heard of pickup artists. Have you heard that term?
Yes.
They were using neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, which is a formula based on covert hypnotic techniques that Milton Erickson, a psychiatrist, developed, teaching people how to rape others because they feel like it, and in some cases giving them amnesia to having assaulted and raped them. This is happening right now, and it's an epidemic, and it's not illegal to use hypnosis to rape somebody. We got close to a court decision with a divorce attorney in Ohio, Michael Fine was his name, I believe. He was hypnotizing his clients, women, and sexually molesting them and giving them amnesia to the abuse. And he got busted because one of his clients was a lawyer, and she got home from his office and she realized her panties were on backwards and there's a wet stain. And she said, I know I put my panties on the right way every morning, and there wasn't a wet stain there this morning. She went to the police. They did a rape kit. It wasn't semen. The police said, tell us what happened. She said, I don't remember. I just know I went to his office and I came home. They said, we can't help you. So you know what this woman did? She went back her next meeting, had a recorder on in her purse, and recorded the molestation and brought it to the police. And they went, holy cow.
Wow.
And they set up a sting, and he had saved recordings he had made of all these women that he raped. And unfortunately, they plea bargained because there's no law for hypnotizing someone. So they, I think they charged him with kidnapping, some bogus something else. They did a plea bargain for 12 years, way too little. But we didn't get our chance to have a precedent-setting case that hypnosis is real and that people can be even made to forget what happened to them.
This is such a complex topic. I want to thank you for writing this book, The Cult of Trump, and for your willingness to appear on Deep Dive with Dr. Tracy. I hope you'll come back and see us again in the future. And Dr. Hassan, the world's foremost expert on mind control and destructive cults, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to the next time if you have me back on.
Dr. Hassan is a world of knowledge, and he talked about media literacy. Our next guest is Michelle Johnson. She's an associate of the Center for Media Literacy and the president of Ignite Global Good. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Very good, Tracy. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Welcome to Deep Dive with Dr. Tracy.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I think as we're seeing with President Biden's Build Back Better bill, that terminology can be a barrier. And in some cases, some terms are inherently political. Can you explain what media literacy is and why it's important and if it's a political topic?
Yeah. Media literacy is being talked about a lot now, even though it's been around for a very long time. And, you know, people think that it means fact checking. They think it means, you know, knowing how to use the library. And the definition that the Center for Media Literacy uses is that media literacy is the ability to access, analyze, evaluate, and create media in a variety of forms. So it is a process of inquiry that allows people to ask the right questions and form decisions for themselves. And the second part of your question, is it political? It's not. It's a set of skills like math or anything else that skills. It's knowing what questions to ask. It's knowing how to analyze and evaluate messages. At no point does media literacy dictate this is good media, this is bad media, you should listen to this message and not that message. What we try to do as media literacy practitioners is build skills so people become wiser consumers and producers of media, with regardless of what that is. And because we all have these, everybody is now not just a media consumer. We're media producers as well. So it is completely apolitical.
So how do you know if you are media literate or not?
I think part of it is in the terminology, when you put that word literacy in there. Well, nobody wants to think that they're not. But the truth is, we were educated for a 20th century media world, and we're living in the 21st century. So most people, if they haven't really taken, excuse the pun on your show, a deeper dive into what media literacy is and how they can become more media literacy, for no fault of their own, they probably don't know. We haven't provided, our society doesn't provide that education.
I'm glad that you clarified that. I mean, when someone isn't media literate, it doesn't mean that they are stupid or they're not intelligent. But I can see how that might be perceived that way. Yes. You know, literate having that negative connotation. So let me ask you, how do you approach a conversation with someone who thinks they have media literacy, but they really don't?
Well, it depends who I'm talking to. If it's somebody who, you know, if somebody starts saying that they're media literate or saying something that's clearly not media literate, I will sometimes say that, you know, tell them what I do and start a friendly conversation. if that's someone you can have a friendly conversation with about it, if it's someone who's really, you know, you can't be a savior for everybody, obviously, and nor do I care to, but it's really about sharing what media literacy is after you have taken the time to investigate it. And it really isn't a lot of time. I mean, there's information out there. The Center for Media Literacy offers a lot of it. There's a lot of information out there if you take a look.
Well, so that was probably one of the cults hacking in. I'm kidding.
I'm
totally kidding.
I'm not going to start any new conspiracy theories here.
I'm kidding. I take it back. So what are some practical actions that we can take to be more media literate?
There are a lot of organizations that offer media literacy information. You can go to medialit.org, and the Center for Media Literacy has been around since 1989, when a lot of people weren't talking about media literacy. So it's really one of the pioneering organizations. So you can check it out there. And if I can give your viewers a little sneak peek, on January 3rd, the Center for Media Literacy is launching a 90-minute free online course on an introduction to media literacy, what it is, what it's like, what the research is behind it. It is self-paced, and that will be launching January 3rd. And again, if you go to medialit.org, you can find a link there.
Now, maybe you can share a little bit of the history, but about how we sort of got here. But inclusive in that question is what should social media and news networks be doing to help consumers develop media literacy, or is it not their responsibility?
Well, in an ideal world, networks and social media platforms and schools and community organizations would all work together to encourage media literacy. Now, I don't think that's realistic. I think that media literacy, it really comes down to developing critical thinking skills and learning to think for yourself and make decisions based on a evidence-based process of inquiry, really. So I would hate to see individuals becoming dependent on organizations that may have other interests like social media or network or really anything. I really am for a grassroots approach where we create a wiser, more well-informed society that is able to make these decisions based on their own needs and values.
Based on the work that you're doing and that you're seeing the result from, is there hope that we're going to sort of emerge from this this situation that we seem to be in with such a divisive nation, and a nation where, you know, a good portion of folks believe things that are simply not facts?
Yeah, I think if we're going to emerge, a lot of different disciplines are going to have to work together to create solutions. Your previous guest, who is more based in social psychology, I'm more based in media literacy and education, technology people. These are disciplines that aren't really accustomed to working together that much. But we have an issue that needs to be addressed from all of those aspects. And I think that we really need to partner with other professionals in other countries, because this isn't a United States problem. This is a global problem. And I think it's going to require global solutions. So is there hope? There's always hope, but we've got to really look at how we're approaching it and be willing to make some serious changes, and hopefully fast.
Michelle Johnson, an associate of the Center for Media Literacy and president of Ignite Global Good, thank you for being here. And I do hope that you'll agree to come back again.
Thank you. It would be my pleasure.
If folks are interested in hearing more, they can tune in and hear an additional interview with Michelle. You can look for it and listen to it on Deep Dive with Dr. Tracy, the podcast, on the upcoming After Show episode, and where it's wherever you find your favorite podcast. So both guests talked about education. And in my lifetime, I've seen education used as a weapon and as a shield, and it's neither. We all can be more educated, and the better educated you are, whether you sit on the left or the right or somewhere in the middle, the better you are able to make decisions and to critically think about the information that we're constantly being pummeled with, whether that information is truthful or not. We are constantly being bombarded with messages. And as we've seen through history, not every messenger has good intentions. The other night, I was talking with some colleagues, and one of the folks I was talking with didn't know that Donald Trump's bankruptcies were to stiff contractors. You know, the blue collar workers that built the buildings and the casinos that made him his money? They didn't get paid. The very people that were lining up behind him to support his campaign with promises that were not going to benefit them. Knowing that he made whatever money he has by screwing the small business owner, the worker, the laborer, made Trump's rise to the presidency befuddling for me. It was something I struggled with constantly. We have to be aware of the messages that are being sent to us, who the leader is, and why. And we need to be open to hearing counter arguments that don't agree with our own, so that we aren't in an echo chamber. Tonight is our last show of 2021. I wish you all a wonderful holiday season and a safe and happy new year. We're gonna be back in January 2022 with all new shows. All across the network. And I, for one, plan on sneaking into the new year quietly, maybe not startling it with the hopes that the new year is better than the last. On behalf of all my colleagues here at ENSL TV, thank you for watching and good night.